te vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, 5th Canto, Chapter 18, The Residents of Jambudweep Offer Prayers, Text 28. Bhavan Yuganta Nava Ormi Malini Shonim Imam Oshadi Viru Damnidim Maya sahoru krama teja ujasa Tasmai jagat prana ganatmane namaiti Bhavan yuganta nava urmi malini Shonim imam oshadi viru damnidim. Maya sahoru krameteja ojasa. Tasmai jagat prana ganatmane namaiti. Bhavan yuganta nava urmi malini. Choni mimam oshadi viru damnidim. Maya sahoru kramateja ojasa. Tasmai jagat prana ganatmane namaiti. Vaishnavis, Bhavan, your lordship, Yuga Anta Arnave, in the water of devastation at the end of the millennium. Urmi Malini, possessing rows of big waves. Shonim, the planet Earth, imam this. Oshadi virutam, of all kinds of herbs and drugs. Nidim, the storehouse. Maya, me. Saha, with. Uru, great. Kramate, you roamed. Aja, O unborn one. Ojasa, with speed. Tasmai, unto him. Jagat, of the entire universe. Pranagana Atmane, the ultimate source of life. Nama, my respectful obeisances. Iti, thus. Translation. O Almighty Lord, at the end of the millennium, this planet Earth, which is the source of all kinds of herbs, drugs, and trees, was inundated by water and drowned beneath the devastating waves. At that time, you protected me along with the earth and roamed the sea with great speed. O unborn one, you are the actual maintainer of the entire universal creation, and therefore you are the cause of all living entities. I offer my respectful obeisances unto you. Purport. Envious persons cannot appreciate how wonderfully the Lord creates, maintains, and annihilates the universe. But devotees of the Lord can understand this perfectly well. Devotees can see how the Lord is acting behind the wonderful workings of the material nature. In Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says, Maya jakshena prakriti suyate sat characharam hetunanena konteya jagat viparivartate. This material nature is working under my direction, O son of Kunti, and it is producing all moving and unmoving beings. By its rule, this manifestation is created and annihilated again and again. All the wonderful transformations of nature are happening under the superintendence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Envious persons cannot see this, but a devotee, even though very humble and even if uneducated, knows that behind all the activities of nature is the supreme hand of the supreme being. Om agena timirandasya gananjana shalakaya chakshur militang yena tasmai shri gurave namaha jai shri krishna chaitanya prabhu nitananda shri advaita gadara sivasri gaur bhaktavinda hare krishna hare krishna 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 hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. In this chapter, you are hearing how residents of different parts of the universe offer prayers. These parts of the universe described are not all within the realm of our sense perception. So, you are dealing with things that are outside the verification of current science. Why should we simply have a problem accepting the existence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead when even material things are so far beyond us? This particular Varsha, Ramyaka Varsha, is ruled by Vaivishvata Manu, the Varsha spoken about in this series of verses. He's describing Matsya Avatar, Lord Matsya Dev, who comes right near the beginning of creation, and also he comes at the end of a particular period of Manu. Actually, this universe is so vast that even such details as is there a cosmic annihilation at the end of every day of Brahma, or the cosmic annihilation that Vaivishvata Manu in his previous birth experienced, maybe it was like a dream. The acharyas, they discuss points like that. the details of this universe are so far beyond human comprehension. And this universe is so vast that you can discuss points like that, which are actually very minor, considering the whole span of the cosmos. We are humbled by this information. Actually, in terms of the material point of view, our life is very insignificant. But we take it, our material life, to be so significant and so all-important. We're saturated with material desires, which we feel are necessary to be fulfilled. There's no doubt about it. I have desires. They must be fulfilled. I'm alive. Therefore, I have things that I need to do, things I need to achieve. The world must go my way at least a good percentage of the time. We are surcharged with that mission, when actually, in the vast cosmos, we're so tiny and so unimportant. In devotional service, we achieve our real importance. Yet a real devotee, even from the devotional standpoint, considers himself or herself to be very tiny. So when is it that we'll ever be the big deal that we think we are? That is the question. When will that day come when we'll actually be so great as we think we are? Actually, from the material point of view, that day will never come. And from the spiritual point of view, that day will never come. So we might as well get over it. Now, hearing this information, which is beyond our material verification, you're hearing about other Varshas, the residents of Jambudweep, you're hearing about Vaivashvatamanu. Let's go over, briefly, the history of Vaivashvatamanu. You know him from Bhagavad Gita, Imam Vivasvate Yogam Proktavana Hamavyam. So, he was Satyavrata during the Chakshusha Manvantar, a previous monarch. And then, at the end of his period of being Manu, there was a cosmic annihilation. And Lord Matsyadeva appeared. Lord Matsyadeva enlightened Satyavrata and the sages from within the core of their hearts. It's interesting how the distribution of transcendental knowledge is always going on. How did it happen this time? While Lord Matsyadeva was swimming through the waters of the cosmic annihilation with great speed, he was speaking transcendental knowledge through the heart of Satyavrata and sages who were in a boat to protect them. How the Lord distributes transcendental knowledge varies from time to time, but it's always happening. So there's no reason for conditioned souls to complain that if God created us, what he did then was leave us in this world and abandon us. The jivas are being maintained spiritually and materially, yet they don't see this. They don't see it because they don't want to see. As soon as you recognize you're being maintained by someone, that means dependency. And the purpose of conditioned life is to be independent, not to be dependent. So therefore, the last thing you want to acknowledge is your dependent relationship for your maintenance. So therefore, in order to fully live the dream of material existence, we have to push ahead thinking, maintenance depends on me, pleasure depends on me, my ability to fight distress, it all depends on me. And this way, our ego assumes monstrous proportions, and we think we are so big, we think we are so important, and in this way, we proceed from one birth to another in different species of life. We can rebel against this information in the fifth canto about the residents of Jambudweep, about the different varshas, about even Lord Matsyadev, the fish incarnation of the Lord. You can imagine telling your material associates, if you have any, at your school, at your workplace, relatives, this morning in church we heard about the fish incarnation, who spoke transcendental knowledge to the into the core of the hearts while he was having fun, literally surfing through the waves of the cosmic annihilation. When you think about it, in terms of our situation in material understanding, what does the conditioned soul actually understand? For example, look at the political and economic situation of the USA. Who can actually understand it? The financial situation is so complex. It's made that way so that those who are on top of the game can literally cheat, and the common man can figure it out. All these complex financial derivatives. And even if you could figure it out, what can you do about it? The banking industry in the U.S. state spends $1 million a day lobbying in Washington, D.C. $1 million a day. So even if you could understand the system, what can you do? So, financially, you can't understand what's going on. Politically, you can barely understand what's going on. Yet, when we hear the information from the fifth canto, we say, oh, this is beyond my understanding. How can I accept this? Things are happening all day long in terms of your material life that are outside of your control, outside of your ability to grasp. Yet you think, oh, well, it's all acceptable. Someone knows what's going on. You know, the Secretary of the Treasury knows what's going on. Or someone, does the President know what's going on? Or someone must know what's going on. There's a new bumper sticker appearing in the USA. I've seen. It's called, "Trust me, I'm your banker." It's actually a very insightful statement about conditioned life, because the average man doesn't understand at all. As we said, the financial system is so complex. So why then do we have a little bit of an attitude about hearing inconceivable information in the Bhagavatam? It can only be attributed, this attitude can only be attributed to envy. You don't want to acknowledge dependency. You don't want to acknowledge that there is a supreme controller who does things his way. Therefore, Prabhupada explains in the purport, envious persons cannot appreciate how wonderfully the Lord creates, maintains, and annihilates the universe. But devotees of the Lord can understand this perfectly well. This means that actually to understand things properly, even something as material maintenance of the universe, you need to have the right attitude. So this is the difference between understanding in Bhagavad Dharma and understanding according to the material point of view. Understanding the science of Bhagavatam means you have to have the right attitude. So the Bhagavatam seeks to develop in you the proper attitude or state of consciousness so that then you can appreciate what's going on. Whereas according to the Western materialistic understanding, what does your attitude have to do with anything? What does your state of consciousness have to do with anything? Just enter the laboratory, enter the classroom, and all knowledge is at your fingertips. This is Maya. Without the right attitude, you can't understand. This is the Bhagavatam position. Change your attitude, change your state of consciousness, and then you can understand. In other words, knowledge is state specific. According to your state of consciousness, that determines how much you can grasp. Therefore, we need purification. Because without purification, we are simply seeing through all our impurities. So this is the major difference. And this is the divide that can't be erased between the materialistic approach to understanding and the bhakti approach to understanding. Krishna plainly says, bhakjamam abhijanati. Only by bhakti can I be understood. Bhakti is an attitude. Now, some people will dismiss that as, well, you have your attitude, I have my attitude, but what about the facts? Attitude is one thing. The facts are another thing. But it doesn't work like that. Bhagavatam will go through great effort to explain to you that your attitude allows you to see certain things as facts and not see other things as facts. And therefore, Prabhupada says, envious persons can't appreciate how the Lord creates, maintains, and annihilates the universe. So some people will say, well, this is just some kind of Hindu folklore or mythology. What is whether you feel inclined to accept the existence of supreme authority or not? What does it have to do with your ability to understand how to live in this world? Let's separate the facts from your emotions and your state of consciousness. That's impossible. And one famous comedian, I don't think he's alive anymore, Jimmy Durante said, revealing the problem with attitude and facts. He said, my mind's made up. Don't try to confuse me with the facts. In other words, I've got a particular state of consciousness. So therefore, don't try to confuse me with other things. So the Bhagavatam recognizes that point of view. It is actually the reality that according to your consciousness, you can understand certain things and you can't understand other things. Therefore, why not purify the consciousness? Our envy of Krishna is so ingrained that we don't even want to see how he's materially maintaining us. What to think, what to speak of accepting his personal pastimes. We don't even want to accept his cosmic material maintenance. Because as I said, as soon as you accept that someone's maintaining you, that means you are dependent. Stalin had a very nice policy based on that understanding. He said, here's what you do if you want to control a whole nation as vast as Russia. Just bring all the citizens to the point of starving, and then you control the food supply. You are their maintainer. You are the source of life for them. So that's how to rule. Just make them starve, and then you show up with the food supply, and they can only get your food from you. You know the example Prabhupada would quote about how during the days when communist and socialist propaganda was intense, people were told, go to the church and pray for bread, and they come out with nothing. Okay. Go to the politicians and ask for bread, and many truckloads of bread show up. So I actually, when I was during the communist days in Europe, I was traveling in former Czechoslovakia, and Krishna Chaitra and I, we were driving past a big building, and there was a huge mural on the side of the building, and indeed, that's what the mural was showing. That people would go to the church and pray for bread and then come out and wait and nothing would happen. And then they would go to their Communist Party headquarters and pray for bread, and 20 truckloads of bread were there waiting for them. So this is for real, this envy. Whether you have the envy the communist way or the capitalist way, it's still envy. How are we going to clean up that envy? Let's consider the case of Hiranyakashipu, because Lord Nrisimhadeva's appearance day is soon approaching. He performed such austerities that his body was golden. He achieved such power that he controlled the functions of nature. The earth would provide food, minerals, herbs, just out of fear of Hiranyakashipu. All the principal demigods were under his control, except Brahma, Shiva, and Vishnu. The saintly persons and sages, even Narada Muni, had to apparently, externally, kowtow to Hiranyakashipu. He took over the throne of Indra. He took over the heavenly planets. He actually presented himself as the supreme maintainer. In spite of having so much power, he was completely dissatisfied. So Srila Prabhupada presents Hiranyakashipu as the prime example of dissatisfaction in contemporary materialistic society. Just like Prahlad Maharaj is the prime example of a bhakta, he remembers Krishna in all circumstances. Hiranyakashipu is the prime example of how you can have it all and still not be happy. Why? He was the servant of his senses. Therefore, he could never be truly happy in spite of such vast power. In spite of opportunities for sense gratification that we can't conceive of. Still, he's dissatisfied. This is the lesson of Hiranyakashipu. So, his envy of Vishnu knew no bounds. In spite of having so much power, in spite of having performed such austerities, he still maintained this envy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He took over the functions of nature. He was the supreme maintainer in his eyes. So this is his attitude is the logical extension of the small timer's envy against the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Hiranyakashipu is showing that envy in bright lights. He's doing us a service by showing us, by magnifying that envy, showing it how it proceeds to its logical conclusion. It's not that I'm just maintaining myself. It's not that I'm just maintaining my family. It's not that I'm just maintaining my nation or the global economy. I am maintaining the universe. In other words, don't be a small timer. Let's just talk about globalism. What about the whole universe? I am maintaining the whole universe. All this is the logical extension of the basic conditioned attitude of the conditioned soul. In spite of all these impediments, these super anarthas, quite dirty things in the heart, Krishna is always working to enlighten us with transcendental knowledge. So therefore he takes the form of a fish and swims through the waters of cosmic annihilation with great delight. And while he's doing that, he's enlightening his devotees to the core of their heart. They're advanced enough that they can hear the Lord speaking in their heart. The Lord speaks from without as the Shastra, as his representative, and the Lord speaks from within as the Supersoul. Without the proper attitude, how can we hear? That's why in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains, Tesham satata yuktanam bhajatam priti purvakam dadami buddhi yogam tam yenamam upayanti te. If you have the right attitude, in other words, Krishna wants devotees with attitude. If you've got the right attitude, what is that right attitude? Priti, affection. beyond performing devotional service because you have to. There is the stage of performing devotional service because you love to. You love to because you are so eager to share affection with the Supreme Beloved. So Krishna says, when you are constantly performing that devotional service with Preeti, then he personally instructs you how to go back to Godhead. Now, it is true, Krishna has instructed everyone in Bhagavad Gita. The Shastra says that by aiming his instructions at Arjuna, Krishna has instructed the whole world for all times and all places. So yes, when you open Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is personally talking to you. But Krishna will go, he'll do even better than that. He says, in other words, besides what I've spoken to you in Bhagavad Gita, I from within your heart, when you are performing devotional service with preeti, with affection, I from within your heart will give you customized instructions how to go back to Godhead. So how can we complain? Krishna is maintaining us materially. He's maintaining us spiritually. Yet, as Prabhupada writes in the purport, envious persons cannot see this, but a devotee, even though very humble, and even if uneducated, knows that behind all the activities of nature is the supreme hand of the supreme being. Attitude is all important. Therefore, our Krishna conscious process is geared to produce devotees with attitude, not just devotees who do things mechanically. It's true that if you engage in devotional service mechanically and stick to it, gradually you'll become purified and the natural desire to serve Krishna will arise. But why not accelerate the process? You accelerate the process even if you're performing devotional service mechanically by associating with those who love to serve Krishna. By associating with those who have zest and enthusiasm. Just like in material life, those who want to be enjoyers, they like to be around others who, as they say, have a lust for life. That's a very appropriate term, a lust for life. When you can remember in your unfortunate conditioned days, how you like to be around persons who were the life of the party and who had a lust for life, who were always pointing out new opportunities for sense gratification. Those were the cool persons. Those were the successful persons who could reveal newer and newer aspects, who could convince you that sense gratification was ever fresh. Actually, what does Lord Chaitanya say? He says, I'd rather live in a cage surrounded by fire than be around those kind of people. But we thought, wow, these are the great people. They make us feel good about life and they show us opportunities for hedonism and sense gratification that we never knew were there. And of course, if you're money mad, you want to be around other persons who are money mad. You become enthusiastic in their association. The same principle works in terms of devotee sangha. When you associate with devotees who just are determined to please Krishna in all circumstances, you become affected by their attitude and you start longing in your heart, when will I have that attitude? And Krishna, in your heart, he hears that desire and he works for you to attain that desire. That is Krishna's pleasure. As the super soul in your heart, he senses your desire, just like you can smell the fragrance of a flower. The desire is so subtle, like that fragrance. So Krishna can sense what may seem to you to be the smallest change in your attitude. But because Krishna is so eager for you to come back to him, even something that you might consider so small, just a sigh in Bhagavatam class. Oh, if I could only be like that. Oh. So you may think, what's the big deal? We're full of so many sighs. We're full of so many longings. Maybe one fraction of a second in Bhagavatam class, we happen to get it right. And, oh, if I could only serve Krishna with a pure desire. But no, Krishna takes that to be immeasurably important. Oh, my devotee has sighed just for a fraction of a second, longing for pure devotional service. Krishna notes that down. That's what it means when the Shastra says that Krishna is more eager for you to go back to Godhead than you are. Now think about that. We're dealing with someone who is the supreme maintainer in the very least. And more importantly, someone who wants us to return to the spiritual world. And that person wants this much more than we desire to escape material existence and be reestablished in our eternal constitutional position. The true ramification of that principle is Krishna will take any desire that you have in your heart for serving him for his pleasure. He'll take that so seriously. And we can't understand fully all the consequences of just having a slight desire change. What to speak of a major desire change? So this is the real maintenance of the Supreme Lord. Maintaining your spiritual desires and developing them. That is what makes bhakti yoga exciting. And when we associate with devotees who are absorbed in serving Krishna for his pleasure, we also become excited. The whole world of bhakti opens up to us by association. Just as when you're associating with someone who is attached to sense gratification or making money, they reveal new opportunities and you become materially enlivened. So everything depends on our association. In the wrong kind of association, you can become very deadened and your envy of the Supreme Lord will increase. I remember when I was maybe 13 or 14 and my mother sent me away to a boarding school, a prep school in the mountains of New Hampshire. And so I was a city boy. And so there I was in these beautiful mountains in New Hampshire. I remember getting on a bicycle and riding around in the mountains and just thinking and it was autumn season, the beautiful trees in the autumn. And I was thinking, how beautiful is this creation? How great God is. That was when I was 13 or so. And then when I was, after a couple of years of education in this high-powered institution, I remember, because ritualistically it was associated with the Episcopal Church and we had to go to chapel twice a week, actually three times a week. We all hated it by that time. So one visiting priest came and he was giving his sermon. And I remember him saying, just look at the mountains, just look at the sky, look at the trees, see the beauty of the cosmos. Certainly there is God. I remember my friends and I, we all looked at each other, how unscientific. How unscientific. We were puffed up by our education. The purpose of this educational institution was to send as many of their students to the Ivy League as possible. That's how they measured their success. So therefore, we were being trained in that appropriate way. So my natural appreciation of the Lord's design of the material world, soon I repudiated as being very primitive. This attitude of awe and reverence. What's that got to do with the true scientific understanding? Just look at the facts. the dissatisfaction and utter dryness that comes from this attitude causes all but the hardcore materialist to crack under its burden. You can't live like that. And soon you come to understand through the school of hard knocks, combined with contact with devotees. You can't right yourself just by the school of hard knocks, being beat up in material existence. Otherwise, the whole world would be devotees because they're getting beat up all the time. It takes something more. That's why Lord Matsyadeva, as he's swimming through the waters at top speed, is speaking to the hearts of Satyavrata and the sages, because something more is needed than the annihilations that are going on all the time in material life. That's not enough to bring us to our senses. We need the mercy of the Supreme Lord in the shape of transcendental knowledge. And the Lord does that himself directly. He does it through his devotees. He does it through the Shastra. And then we wise up. Otherwise, if you just wait around to learn your lesson from material life, it'll be a very long time. Birth after birth, as Krishna says, Bahunam Jamanam Ante, Ganavamam Prapajite, after many births and deaths. The Gyani. So who's living like a Gyani these days? Who's living the lifestyle of a Vedic Gyani? But even they, the Vedic Gyanis, after many, many births and deaths, they finally understand Vasudeva Sarvamiti, Krishna is everything. So what to speak of those who are living such wild Western Kali Yuga lifestyles? They're actually, do you think they're actually going to learn something by experience? If while being beat on the head by material nature they come in contact with a devotee of the Lord, then their life can change. Contact with a devotee means changing the attitude. When the attitude changes, what you see as facts change. These are the basic principles of understanding transcendental knowledge, even understanding how this material world works. As we approach Lord Nrisimhadev's appearance day, let's look in our hearts and see how any remnants of the Hiranyakashipu attitude exist. I am independent. I am the maintainer. It's all up to me. Prahlad Maharaj notes that although Hiranyakashipu had power over the whole universe, and he even took over the functions of material nature, he was finished in a second by Lord Nrisimhadev. Therefore, Prahlad's conclusion was, what's the use of material benedictions? They have no value. I've seen firsthand what happened to my father, who had unrivaled power, yet he's finished in a second. I don't want any material benediction. I just want constant engagement in devotional service. Any comments or questions? Yes, Prabhu.
Maybe you're familiar with William F. Buckley Jr. After he graduated from Yale in 1952, he wrote a book called God and Man at Yale. And there, in that book, he explains how the Ivy League schools of the East Coast, which were originally started as seminaries, they actually the result of an education there was to convince young people to be atheists. He cites the example of one Professor Goodenough, interesting name, who was a professor of religion and who said that he was 80% atheist and 20% agnostic. So, and this is a professor of religion. Right? So, your comment about how your education led you to disbelieve in God, I think is very telling about education of modern America.
One last story, just because I know it's getting a little late. This is a little funny. So I told you what my attitude was by the time I was 14. Then when I was 16, before I graduated, my friends and I played a prank. It was before Christmas, when all the students would leave for their Christmas break. And so, as usual, we had our chapel service. And so, you know, they would put a student in charge, a different student in charge every week, to give out programs for the chapel service as the students and professors filed in to the chapel. So it was the week for my friends and I to be in charge of making up the program that you give out, just like you have in the front here, you have programs. So we were in charge of making up the program and distributing it as the students and professors would solemnly file into the chapel. So it was Christmas season. So we, on the outside of the program, it was a brochure, we had a picture of what we thought Jesus looked like, and he was waving a peace sign and saying, "Only 10 days left to Christmas shopping." And on the inside, we put a shloka, a mantra: "May all my enemies go to hell. Noel, 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 Noel." So we stood. We stood at the entrance to the chapel, and as the students and faculty, you know, these old, you know, professors, as they were walking in very solemnly, we'd and they would open it, you know. So this is the effect of material education. We misused our intelligence completely, and we thought we were having a good time at it. Hare Krishna, glories to the Roman.